Michael Tesserian, our guest. Michael, before we get back into Atlantis, you had mentioned a little bit about British history about Atlantis. Did it have anything to do later on with the legends of King Arthur? I've always been curious about that.
Yes, it's interesting that we have the movie coming out. Again, the whole Arthurian legend is mm-hmm. well-loved and well-browsed, you know, a perennial study. As a matter of fact, this is what I meant when we first start talking about the importance of the Celtic connection, because the Arthurian tradition is actually based on earlier characters of the Gaelic people in Ireland. They have their Arthur, the Celtic people had Artur.
Artur, it's got to be the same person.
Same, similar basis. You have the great sun knight, this knight of the sun, Lancelot, mm-hmm. and you have our sun god, Lu. You have Guinevere and Morgan Le Fay in the Arthurian tradition.
Sure.
We have the Morrigan, which was one of the queens of
uh-huh.
Ireland, you know, a warrioress who was married to one of the kings of the high Celtic people.
How about Merlin, the magician?
Yes, this is, I'm glad that you brought that up because that expresses it perfectly. You see, everyone has heard of Merlin, and that's a fascinating character. He is also one of three very powerful Druidic magician types. Two of them, one was Welsh, who was called Taliesin. The bard Taliesin
mm-hmm.
was a person that either predated or was contemporary to the image of Merlin. But way before that, about 5, 6, 7, and I'm being conservative here, 6 or 7 thousand years B.C. in Ireland, the prototype of the Merlin figure was a being called, it's hard to pronounce in Gaelic, it's, let me see if I can try it.
Boy, if you can't, nobody will.
Well, I'm trying to save you that. His name was Avergahain, which is actually pronounced Emergan.
Uh-huh.
It looks, if you're reading it, Emergan, A-M-E-R-G-I-N, but in Gaelic it's Avergahain. Avergahain is the head of our order. He is the druid that was of the high cults, because the thing to understand is that the Celts are, of course, a huge race. We're talking about an enormous demographic.
Sure.
So we have to be specific. Within the Celtic people was their elite, was their magical and royal elite. They were called the Gaelic people.
Mm-hmm.
And they are mostly to be found in Ireland and in the Isle of Man and in certain parts of northern Scotland. And then within the Gaelic group themselves is yet another division, smaller still, of the real, you know, arch-druids, the very purest and most powerful of all the magicians. And Evergahain was the druid and the bard of that group. So he is the prototype. Now, of this extremely important elite group in Celtic mythology, the king, the high king of Ireland, he had a sword. And that sword, he called it Retaliator. And Retaliator is the sword that is the prototype of the famous Excalibur.
Right.
So there's not a single detail, not even a person, not even a personage within the Arthurian tradition that cannot be tracked back to Ireland and to the original, even the, you know, the Sir Gawain and the Green Giant, the green Knight. That goes back to a character in Celtic mythology called the Dagda, the all-powerful, the all-father.
Well, are you saying, though, that the Celts were offshoots or offspring of the Atlanteans?
Both the Atlanteans and the Lemurians. One of the other cultures we haven't been speaking about so far was the Lemurian race, who was a contemporary of Atlantis, and they... the Gaelic people are more of a Lemurian stock.
Ah.
But they definitely were hybridized on Atlantis. These beings that we're talking about are descendants of the original being that was the hybridized individual that I describe in the book as Homo Atlantis. We are Homo sapien, and sapiens is a word that just means the intelligent or wise one.
Right.
I just prefer a term in the book for argument's sake is Homo Atlantis, because the being that we are, this individual creature that we are today, that has both alien DNA and human DNA, was actually created on Atlantis by the visitors.
You know, Sylvia Brown, the psychic, says that I'm a reincarnated Atlantean. And Art Bell, too, she said.
Many people will use that term generically. Many people will use it specifically. I can't speak for, you know, because it's such a generic term. I you know, we're talking about a lot of people's interpretations here, which may be right and may be wrong. I am, again, just a purist who's going straight to an archival source of information for my information.
Okay, now, did I hear you correctly? Did they come from this planet that blew up between Jupiter and Mars, or did they come from a different one?
No, they came from an entirely different solar system. They came from a solar system, I believe, was in Alpha Draconis. And I know, of course, there's been great debate about this. Did they come from the Pleiades? Did they come from Sirius? You know, where on earth did these people come from? To tell you the truth, in my work, that is a much lesser concern. I am more focused on, like Jack Barringer is, about what is the psychological impact on us of this visitation. I am interested, of course, in where they come from, but it's not my foremost interest. My most important interest, as I said, I'm not a scientist. I'm a philosopher. I am very much fascinated with the legacy of this. What kind of impact on the psyche? You know, my book is entirely about the question of evil, the question of injustice, the question of this proclivity that every human being on this planet has within themselves. I don't care if you find it in the halls of government, which we do, unfortunately, but we have it within ourselves, this propensity for immorality, this injustice to, you know, even if it's in a small, petty way, it exists. It's the endless conflict from the time we're born as to whether to be good or to be bad, if you want the most simplistic terms. The age-old question of evil. I personally do not believe that is just a happenstance of nature, the erstwhile movement of nature, you know, flubbing it with its highest creation. Here we are in a universe that is perfect, in absolute balance, from the largest neutron star, right, to the smallest atom, mm-hmm. is in perfect harmony. How can the force, nature, that brings that into existence, then make a big boo-boo with its so-called highest, you know, creation, which is man? I do not believe that nature created this proclivity, which is driving the world to ecocide, which is putting us at each other's throats, which is causing all of the disasters throughout time. I do not believe that nature is responsible for that. I believe that something that has been tinkering and tampering around with nature's laws is responsible for it. I now know what that is.
Do you believe, Michael, that there are remnants of Atlantis somewhere on the bottom of the sea?
Yeah, there are, and as we talked earlier, definitely, we are finding these. And it's the old Indiana Jones situation, you know, we might be shown some of this stuff, and the rest of it might just end up in that big warehouse buried, you know, in under the vaults. I would love to go browsing with you into the, you know, underground libraries at the Vatican. I would love to, you know, spend a day and look around under the Oxford University, you know, libraries and what have you, and all the other private libraries. Only one-tenth, less than one-tenth of the books that have ever been written are available to you and I and to the rest of the listeners. We have a serious marginalization and sequestering of knowledge, not only by secret societies, but by institutions of learning, so-called, and we are not provided access to these wonderful, you know, records. But my mentors, that is, you know, Commons Beaumont, C.S. Lewis, Tolkien, they did. And they realized that they had to get this out to the public, but they couldn't do it in an official way because they would have been censored. So they chose the medium of fiction, what we now call fiction, the high fiction. And they created their great works in order to, and also did the medieval artists. We're talking about art here as well. Some of the finest artists from the medieval period and before and since have portrayed in their art, if you know what you're looking at, incredible information about the pre-Diluvian era and the whole of the conflict that I'm talking about.